Alyssa Walker Campbell is on the air.
Asking the questions you want to know.
With sports' biggest and best name, Dallas Mavericks head coach Rick Carlisle.
And one of the ways you get high percentage threes is to get offensive rebounds and toss them back out. And if we don't get those rebounds, they're going to get them and toss them back out.
Now, rebounding is a massively important stat.
The fastest hour in radio. Big names, big sports talk. The Big E Sports Show, hosted by Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Welcome you back to eRadioSports.com. I'm your host, Alyssa Walker Campbell, and the lights are certainly shining very bright. That's because the 2013 NBA playoffs are underway, and we're going to take time to survey the landscape and how so many of the storylines continue to unfold. I am so delighted to be alongside a gentleman that is applying a full court press with USA Today and their coverage of this year's NBA playoffs. He's doing a great job, and it's always a pleasure to welcome in the senior NBA writer for Hoops World, Bill Ingram, and also the author of his brand new book, and we're going to talk about that here momentarily. Welcome aboard.
Thanks. We've certainly done our share of time in this building together and suffering through some hard times and some good times, but it's always exciting to talk the NBA, even when the Dallas Mavericks are not involved.
And that is unfortunate, but we're going to have some fun here today. We're going to do a little bit of a Q&A on so many of this series and how they continue to unfold. The first one at hand, let's talk about San Antonio and the Golden State Warriors. I think it surprised a lot of folks. This has had and featured three overtime series, youth versus a veteran club. What intrigues you the most about this particular series?
Well, I think, when you talk about the Golden State Warriors, it's a team that hasn't been this far in the playoffs since 1978, and to me that's exciting. Whether or not you're a fan of the Warriors or just a fan of the game, it's great to have new blood. I really like to see someone like Steph Curry, who is so overlooked and who sat in the visitors' locker room here right after the All-Star picks were made, the coaches' picks, and he was not chosen, and told me he took it personally. A lot of times guys will say, it would have been nice, but we're focused on, but Steph didn't play that. He actually said, people are going to see that this was a mistake. And so to see him deliver on that, to see Klay Thompson play incredibly well in a role where, some injuries created a bigger role for him, and he's flourished, to see Carl Landry, who's been kind of passed from team to team to team, really finding a home here. David Lee's had an outstanding year, obviously injured for the playoffs for the most part, but it's a great team. It's fun to watch them. Now, can they take out the San Antonio Spurs? When the Spurs are healthy, even though they're not the knockdown, dragout defensive team they've been for 15 years, they're still a very very veteran, very savvy team. And I believe that when it comes down to having to win in San Antonio, that's going to be a tall order. I think the Spurs are still going to come out ahead, but the Warriors have had a really nice offseason.
Of course, they're led by their head coach, Greg Popovich. But let's expound and talk some more about number 30, Stephen Curry, because he has really been incredible. The resiliency that he showed on Mother's Day coming back from that left ankle sprain was really remarkable, and he inspired his team to win.
Well, that's Steph. Steph is not somebody that's going to take a playoff. We've seen Dirk Nowitzki do this many times where the diagnosis is always about 6 to 8 weeks and he's back the next game. Just tape it up a little more. And that's what, on Sunday morning, the stories were, what can the Warriors do without Steph? And then he went out there and played well. So I think in order to win a championship, in order to have postseason success, you have to have another place that you go to. If you're a player, you have to be able, you have to be able to turn off the pain receptors in your brain. Because by the time you get to this point of the season, most players are banged up, unless your name is LeBron James. Everybody else is banged up. And you just have to fight to overcome that. And Steph is showing the kind of leadership that you hope. He's shown the ability and the talent. Now, the leadership is the key to being a franchise player. And Steph is showing the whole package right now.
Do you agree with head coach Mark Jackson? He made a profound statement saying that his trio, his backcourt, was perhaps the best shooting backcourt of all time in the NBA?
Well, now, all time, you start to get into some pretty, Reggie Miller was...
I want you to weigh in on that.
Ray Allen and Gary Payton, you've had some guys that were pretty, that's tough. I don't think we're quite there. Steph Curry is one of the great three-point shooters for sure, but anytime you talk about something that's going on right now, everybody, LeBron James is the greatest player of all time. I had a chat question this week where somebody said, is Dwayne Wade now a top 10 player of all time? And I'm like, God, the problem with trying to say all time is you've got, Oscar Robertson averaged a triple-double for an entire season. Now, if a guy does it three or four times, wow, that was LeBron's fourth triple-double. Woohoo! But he averaged a triple-double for an entire season. You know, Wilt Chamberlain had 100 points in a game. When you talk about all-time greats, you're talking about Magic Johnson. Larry, how about Magic Johnson and Byron Scott? That's a pretty good three-point shooting backcourt. You know, when you start talking all-time, you run into the issue of there have been so many amazing players, and Mark Jackson should know this. He played against some of those guys. So, no, I wouldn't go there, but I can appreciate that what he's trying to do is send the message to his team just how much faith and confidence he has in them, and that approach that he's had has worked very well to this point. So, good for you, Mark, but I... There's been a lot of great players over the years.
Well, I have to admit, I do remember those playing days of Mark Jackson. 17 years as an NBA point guard. He was the Rookie of the Year in 1988. I think one thing, Bill, that we can definitely agree on is that Mark Jackson has done a remarkable job this year, and he very well could have even been Coach of the Year in the NBA.
Well, he was a strong candidate. And yeah. And I got to say, Keith Smart is a friend of mine, too. And in his defense, they were asking him to transform the team into a defensive team. But they didn't give him the pieces to do that. And so it's important to note that when they hired Mark Jackson, they also revamped the team with some defensive players, Andrew Bogut being number one. You trade Monte Ellis, you get Andrew Bogut, and now that he's healthy, you're seeing. You know, I mean, this team is not the same Warriors team that was under Keith Smart that Mark Jackson took over. They put a new coach in, but they also brought in the players to change that culture into a defensive culture. And those two factors, I mean, Mark's done a great job, but it is those two factors, management as well as coaching, that has brought about this radical change in that franchise.
I am so glad, Bill, you bring up Andrew Bogut, because I really believe that in this particular matchup, he has been the X factor in my mind. They're missing the dominance of David. I mean, 18 and 10, you know, he provided that all season long. And how Andrew has stepped up, and he's providing double-digit rebounding, and he didn't do that in the regular season. That really says something about the heart that he's bringing night in and night out.
Well, it does. And what you have to realize, Andrew Bogut has not been healthy all year. And so he's been battling injury. He didn't play a lot of games, and then he even admitted that he was considering retirement for a while because it has been such a persistent situation. And to see him, the healthier he gets, the better they are. I mean, the Milwaukee Bucks were very, very good when Andrew Bogut was healthy. Just the issue was he was never healthy. So to see him now getting healthier and able to contribute the way that, I mean, when Andrew Bogut is healthy, he's a top five NBA center. And I think we forget that because there are so many times where he's not healthy and we haven't seen him consistently for quite some time. And it's easy to then forget. But once he gets really healthy, we're going to see this team is, you know, there's something else when he's at full speed.
Well, you still are very optimistic in terms of what San Antonio may be able to accomplish. How are they going to get it done?
Well, I'm a big believer in veteran savvy. The exact right decision at the exact right time. Now, the Spurs did not do that in the last game where they lost in overtime, where they had the lead. Normally, San Antonio is not a team that gives up a lead, but they gave up the lead and wound up losing. I mean, the Warriors just took it away from them in overtime. But, you know, this is a team that's, I don't think they're going to allow that to happen again. And with the Spurs, it's them allowing it. It's not so much the Warriors doing it to them. The Spurs were making some mistakes down the stretch, and that's why the Warriors came back. And, you know, there's no coach in the league better than Greg Popovich. He's been the best coach in the league for a long, long time. And I know that the kind of adjustments that they're going to make and just where they're going to be mentally as they get back to San Antonio, the Warriors have to take, to win this series, have to take 2 out of 3 in San Antonio. And the way that crowd's going to be and as focused as that team's going to be, they understand more than anyone else that Tim Duncan doesn't have too many more shots at this. Yeah. And they can't afford to waste this one.
You know, I've heard it over and over again, everyone giving high praise to Coach Popovich and how effective he is as a coach. What makes him so special?
He said it many times, and it's exactly right. It's that his superstar allows him to coach the team. Mm-hmm. Tim Duncan if he has a disagreement with Pop, you'd never know. He's not someone that gets upset or you know, we've seen in the Brooklyn-Chicago series, the Nets were Gerald Wallace, I don't know what my role is on this team. Like, really? You're in the playoffs and you don't know what your role is on the team? Wow. You never see that from San Antonio because there is a mindset, a culture that has set in, that it is San Antonio culture. And if you are not willing to be a part of that culture, which is selflessness, it's team first, it's whatever coach asks for, and then some. You know, Steven Jackson had a problem with that late in the season, and what happened? See you later. Tracy McGrady came in. So I think the importance of having the ability to establish that culture, which not every coach has that liberty, because you're so dependent upon the star buying in. And in an era where stars don't necessarily buy in, Carmelo Anthony, LeBron James, these are guys that have caused big changes within franchises over the years and changes for themselves from one franchise to another as a result. You know, Greg Popovich has established a culture. His guys play within it. And the key guys, Tim Duncan, Manu Ginobili, Tony Parker, never question. And that's the power that he has, that, you know, that situation. That's why they have been so good for so long.
Very well said. Well, let's transition now. Let's talk about the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Memphis Grizzlies. This has certainly been a very dynamic series, to say the least. But the one thing, my takeaway, is that OKC has had to forge a new identity. I mean, they are depleted. They're vulnerable. They've had to compensate in many different areas. And I think they're going to value Russell Westbrook a whole lot more going into next year.
I think they already did, but there are two factors. One, you're right, the adjustment. Somebody has to pick up a lot of points because Russell Westbrook drops 30 on a regular basis, and without that, they've struggled to score. Because Kevin Durant, as the Rockets showed, which was obviously they lost Russ, they had no adjustment time, and then the Rockets were just zoning Kevin and keeping him from getting the ball, and no one else was scoring the ball, so they struggled in the first round. Now we're seeing in the second round that the Thunder have started to make some adjustments. Reggie Jackson's playing great. You know, Kevin Martin has started to, he was horrible in the first round, has started to step up a little bit now. Serge Ibaka is hitting his jumper and giving some points. The adjustment period is starting to set in. And, you know, if they only had practice time and training camp to go through, as it is, they're going to have a lot of time this summer to think about it. But the other factor is the move that Sam Presti made when he decided that he was not going to play out the year with James Harden, that he was not going to allow James Harden to be the story every night, because, you know, media is, what we tend to do is the low-hanging fruit would be every night, what's going to happen with James Harden? What's going to happen with James Harden? What's going to happen with James Harden? And it wouldn't have been about the Thunder. And Sam Presti, their GM, wants every night to be about the game and the team on the court and not about external stuff. So number one, he knew he couldn't afford to give Harden that kind of money that Houston gave him, because of the market size and the new collective bargaining agreement. And number two, losing Russell Westbrook. I mean, those two things will be the reason the Thunder are going to lose in the second round instead of being back in the NBA Finals.
Not to get off track too much, but James Harden, I mean, how he made that seamless transition, in my mind, perhaps he was the most improved player in the league this year. He posted incredible all-star numbers.
He did. The problem that you have is that Houston ran almost exclusively, you give the ball to James, he puts his head down and barrels his way to the basket with that little Euro step, which I kept waiting for it to be called the travel, but apparently that's not a travel. You know, I can understand if it's Kobe and it's not a travel and LeBron never travels, but James Harden, young player, that's already not, okay. So I think as much as that helped them, it also hurt them. Because you had a lot of guys kind of disgruntled about how, well, we're just going to all stand around and watch him go to the hole and wonder if he's going to pass it. And if a team was able to stop Harden, which the Thunder did, then they didn't really know what to do. Jeremy Lin had an okay season. He's an okay player. There's a lot of hype around him. But Jeremy Lin's a 14-6 player. He's a very good backup point guard. You're starting him. Then you have really no one at power forward, kind of a rotation going on, and they made a trade midseason and some uncertainty there. Then Omer Asik, who's not going to hurt you if you just give him the ball and ask him to create, but feeds well off of cuts and back cuts and, you know, passes for dunks. So James Harden kind of had a situation where it was go out and score, and he did that. But now if you're going to ask that team to take it to the next level, James is going to have to learn how to share the ball, not just assist, that's you drive and you dish it at the last minute, but actually set up plays and run something. I mean, that's going to be a challenge for him to not just score points, but really be a winner. There's a difference, and he's going to have to learn how to do that.
Let's talk some more about the Oklahoma City Thunder, the Memphis series. And I think one thing that OKC has been missing is production, consistent production from their bigs. You were just talking about Serge Ibaka. It is neat to see how he has developed. He's evolved as a player. He's stroking it from 15 to 17 feet. But Kendrick Perkins has been a non-factor, and that is huge. You've got to have some production from your five man.
The thing is, this isn't a surprise. Kendrick Perkins is a factor on the defensive end. He's the tough guy. He's had an immeasurable impact on Kevin Durant. I mean, if you talk to Kevin about Kendrick Perkins' impact, and he will tell you no one has had a bigger impact on him.
How so?
In terms of how he looks at the game. Mm-hmm. They study tape together. They look before the game. You'll see them in the locker room, and Kevin just follows Kendrick around. And he's getting advice. He's getting tips. So Kendrick has had a profound impact on Kevin Durant. But where he doesn't have a profound impact is on the offensive end. And they had a couple of deals that perhaps could have been made, one of which was Marcin Gortat, Phoenix Suns center, who is quite a capable offensive player. And of course he got hurt, so that kind of becomes a moot point. But
so
if they traded him, it creates another way that the team can beat you. And right now what the problem the Thunder have is Kevin's going to give you 30 to 35 points. You can count on that. But you need about 85 to 90 to win a game if you play very good defense. And where the rest of those points are going to come from has been their challenge, and it's why they're down in the series.
What are your thoughts about Kevin Durant? I mean, everybody talks about his scoring, his ability, but I think he's done an amazing job in terms of his ability to extract defenders and make that pass.
It's basketball IQ. Kevin is not just a scorer. You know, Carmelo Anthony for years has been a great scorer, but until this year, he was not a great player. Yes, put points on the board, but your team doesn't get very far. Whereas Kevin has learned spacing, he's learned passing, he's learned that it's when to defer and when to put the team on his back. And he's playing great defense this year, which up till this point, that was his big thing last summer, was he wanted to be a very good defender. And he's added a lot of defense to his game. So, with Kevin, you've got a cerebral guy who wants to be... Every year he wants to be measurably better at some part of the game, or at every part of the game. And when you have a superstar that has no ego whatsoever and wants to work just as hard as everybody else, you have what Greg Popovich has had in Tim Duncan. There's no ego. He never questions. Whatever the coach says goes, and he's going to give 110% on the court and in the locker room and practice. There's no, I'm too good to practice mentality, even from Tim Duncan, the greatest power forward of all time. Kevin Durant, one of the great small forwards, certainly one of the best players in the league today, has the same mentality. It's not going to change. It's been long enough. We know he's not going to change. And that just spells great things for the Thunder. They just need to put, they're a piece or two away again now.
You're absolutely right. I've had a chance to spend time around Key. Just a wonderful young man and a great role model for our youth. And he really is a student of the game. He's always trying to take his game to the next level. Now, the other team we got to talk about in the series, let's talk about the Chicago Bulls, Miami Heat. Of course, it seems like this series is completely over, but it has been very, very physical. And all I can say in mommy terms is that Joakim Noah and LeBron James, they're not going to be having a play date anytime soon and hanging out in the offseason. I mean, wow, it has really been something else, hasn't it?
Well, it has. And, you have to first say what an amazing playoff run it's been for Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's true.
Because
missing so many players.
No Derrick Rose. And then as you had no Joakim Noah to start the series. And just the further they go, the more, you lose Kirk Heinrich, you lose Lou Alding, and he's not, and neither of those guys are going to be back. And then you think they're just toast. And yet they did get a game in Miami right at the beginning. And the next game was, they got blown out. Then it was a very competitive game. They have held their own. And the fact that they eliminated the Brooklyn Nets, who had sky high expectations, this has been a great year for Chicago. But my thing is, the thing that's kind of been the overshadowing of the Bulls has been the Derrick Rose question. Every day, where is Derrick Rose? Why isn't Derrick Rose playing? What's wrong with Derrick? He can't play through pain? That's not it. I talked to a friend of mine who works with their PR department, and I just said, what's going on? He's been cleared to play since February. Mm-hmm. He's practicing full speed. Why is he not playing? And he said, well, none of us really know, except that he's worried that he will go back out on the court and it'll happen again, because he's had two major injuries, missed a lot of time, and he's worried about that. So what he wants to do is go the entire year and the entire summer and come back ready to go in the fall for next season. So my thing is this. Why don't you just say that? I mean, that's how you end all of this. There's no Twitter. Somebody on Twitter said this, and then there's a headline about that, and is he going to play game three, and is he going to play game four? All of that ends. And the fans who are so frustrated, and he's become the butt of jokes. Like, people are making fun of Derrick Rose because he's weak now, and he can't play through this, and can't. All of that ends if he comes out in February when he returns to practice and says, look, I want to make sure that when I return, I'm 100%. And to that end, I'm not going to play the rest of this season, even though I feel good, I'm getting my motion, my mobility back, I'm feeling confident in the knee, the leg, everything. But to be sure, I'm going to wait and come back next year. In the meantime, I'm going to be at the end of the bench, rooting my team on, in street clothes, but I'm not going to play. And then guess what? It's not a story. That's it. Then the story is the Bulls. But instead, every day, it's, is Derek going to play then? Well, what does it take to get Derek Rose? Why isn't he playing? He's letting his team down. He could have set all that aside, but he hasn't done that. And as a result, what do we hear every day? Is Derek Rose going to play? Why isn't he playing? He's hurt. He's letting his team down. He's afraid to play through injury. Like, just put all that to rest.
How do you think the team has responded, though? They seem very supportive, and I would say that starts at the top with Coach Thibodeau, that he really keeps those guys corralled in and supporting each other and supporting Derek on his decision, because I'm sure it's not easy. And as a competitor, you want to be out there playing and contributing.
Well, that's just it. And I did have a chance to talk to Lou Aldang a little bit about it. Okay. And he said, you know, our mentality is only the player knows. When you as a player, you're the only one that knows when you're really ready. Mm-hmm. And being ready means physically ready, but also mentally ready. And if you're not mentally ready, it might cause you to second guess a sit. Like, you might be about to make a move and then you second guess, and that's when you could have a really bad injury. If you start to make a move, second guess, go to make a different move, then that's when your knee slides or your ankle slides or something happens and you are hurt even worse. And so they all respect that. They've all been hurt. They all know what he's going through. So I give him a lot of credit, because some teams would be like, well, we don't know why Derek isn't playing, but they've been very supportive. And you know, it's just tough to watch a player just as amazing as Derek Rose is, to know that he is healthy and he's not playing. It's hard to watch that team knowing, come on, Derek, check into the game, make this more interesting, because they've been great. If Derek Rose is healthy, not to mention Lou Alden, Kirk Heinrich, I think Miami has a problem on their hands.
Well, the good news is that he will be back next year, and he's still very young. How old is he?
I don't know, but he's very young, 23, 4. Right. He's got a lot. And that's the other thing. This guy has probably 15 years of elite basketball ahead of him. So we're worried about a couple months here and there. And in the grand scheme of things, let the guy get healthy and be Derrick Rose next season.
The other series that we definitely want you to weigh in on, talk about as far as the Pacers and the Knicks. What stands out in your mind when you've been following that and tracking it?
You always wonder, obviously there are a couple guys on the Knicks team that I thought they're really going to help Carmelo, because they won a championship here in Dallas a couple years ago, Jason Kidd and Tyson yes. Chandler. And even though our owner here told us that they were too old to really compete anymore and probably shouldn't spend any money keeping them around, they did have the second best record in the Eastern Conference this year, and Tyson Chandler's been pretty okay for them, as has Kidd. So, but those things, I think they've had a great impact on Carmelo, because he's learned to be an all-around player instead of that one-dimensional, just go score, don't worry about the defensive end. But, you know, with Indiana, you've got an outstanding front line. You know, Roy Hibbert. I don't know what was going on in his head for the first, like, 80 games of the season, but all of a sudden, at the end of the season and now the playoffs, he has become, oh, Roy Hibbert, max contract player, you know, which everybody was asking, well, he got the money, what's happening now? So he's gotten over whatever the mental block was there. And David West, probably one of the most underrated players in the league. You know, we got two guys, Mike Conley and David West, who have been outstanding in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Nobody talks about them. Nobody mentions Mike Conley or David West in their top
underrated,
five, whatever.
Yes.
And yet, if I'm going to battle and I can have any power forward in the league, not named Dirk, I'm probably taking David West, because offensively, defensively, in the locker room, he's the toughness guy. He's brought so much to that team. He was the missing piece of their culture. In fact, Frank Vogel told me David West is our culture. That's the impact he's had on that team. And that front court, you know, combined with Paul George's just extreme makeover, you know, Danny Granger's injury created that opportunity. Paul really struggled in October and November, and then he just flourished. Obviously an all-star now. That's the story of Indiana. They've put the pieces in place, and they came together at the right time, and they look good.
So, Bill, who do you see in the finals this year?
As much as I would like to say something else, I think Miami is the Eastern team, though, again, I think Indiana has the tools to make it tough on them. And it wouldn't shock me if Indiana won the series, but my guess is Miami, because they're so deep. Even with Dwayne Wade injured, they've got so many, I'm assuming he's injured, they've got so many pieces that come off the bench. They're so deep. LeBron's having an amazing year. Chris Bosh creates problems at center, though he won't against Indiana. And then I'm guessing if San Antonio can stay healthy, assuming they don't lose Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, or Tim Duncan, it's going to be really tough for Memphis, assuming it's Memphis, to get past them. Because again, you've got the clock ticking mentality. You've got the veteran savvy. You've got, you know, guys that Manu Ginobili is like Mr. Intangible. whenever the game's on the line and he has the ball, you just know whatever's about to happen, it's going to be amazing. They're going to win. So I think that gives San Antonio an edge, although I do like if Memphis had one more scorer off the bench, if they had, say, O.J. Mayo, if they had someone else bringing something off the bench, and not, you know, I'm not sold that Jared Bayless is like that force that's going to change everything. They need their Jason Terry. They need that one guy that's going to come in and give them a pickup, give them a three, give them something that they right when they need it the most. And not having that, I think the Spurs are going to take them out of their game enough that it's going to be awfully hard for Memphis to score enough points. Just to score enough points to win that series.
I think another quick question I want to talk about, you know, we've highlighted so many of the wonderful players that are part of this series that have been a part of this league all season long, but it really is a league that's comprised of just some amazing coaches. We were just talking about, you know, George Karl, Coach of the Year in the NBA, Mark Jackson, Tom Thibodeau has been fabulous, Lionel Hollins, and also I think the job that Rick Carlisle did here with the Dallas Mavericks, it was not easy getting his team back to 500. We're very fortunate as fans of the game right now to see some of the all-time best.
Well, we really are, and you're right. I mean, Rick Carlisle was handed a team that all one-year contracts, probably a playoff team if Dirk doesn't need that knee procedure. So then you lose Dirk for 2 months, a little more than 2 months, and, you know, and then it took him a month, really, to be Dirk again.
That was his training camp, yeah.
Yeah, it really was. And by the time Dirk was healthy, it was just that much too late. But Rick is. You see the adjustments that he makes. You see the things, and when you talk to the players about what he asks them to do, the way, like Sean Marion's a great example. He told Sean, you can be much more effective in the paint. And Sean was like, I'm not a paint. I'm a shoot threes. I'm fast break. And okay, that's what you were, but that's not what you are anymore. Mm-hmm. And so for you to continue to be an effective player, you're going to have to make an adjustment. And here's what it is. And he showed him some things, and Matrix started working on those things, and they worked. And he went, wow. And so then he worked harder, and now you see him in the paint all the time. I don't particularly like that little flip shot. I'm always like, just go ahead and dunk it. Just get
as long as it goes
but,
in. Right?
But it goes in a lot. Yeah. So yeah, but that's a Rick Carlisle thing. He helps guys find new. Players within themselves, new things that they could do that they've never done before. And he's got a coaching staff that's great. And I love that Caleb Canales is now on the coaching
exciting.
Staff.
Yes.
But he's got a coaching staff that really helps bring that out as well.